It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. More than 1,600 American service members lost limbs in Iraq and Afghanistan. They are among the 2 million Americans with amputations. And in many cases, prosthetics replace those missing limbs. Science has advanced significantly. During the Civil War, lost limbs were often replaced with stiff prosthetics made of carved wood from barrels. These days, a new generation of smart prostheses are capable of imitating natural movement. Doug Smith is an orthopedic surgeon at Harborview and the University of Washington, and Doug's a pioneer in the development of limbs that can interpret signals from the brain. Marcy Silman talked to Dr. Doug Smith about his research.
You're one of a small group of doctors who is working on something that essentially rewires nerves to help these prosthetics work, and you call it re-innervation. I'm a little bit confused. If I don't have a leg, where do the nerves come from?
Great question. So nerve management has always been a part of amputation surgery. And traditionally, for hundreds of years, the nerves were simply divided. And the nerves were dead-ended. Your brain just kind of sent signals down to that nerve and it had nowhere to go. And going back about 15 or 20 years ago, there was a group that started talking about actually taking these nerves and transferring them to muscles to keep the nerves physiologic, to keep them working. So if I am, for example, an amputee below the elbow,
okay,
there are still some muscles between my elbow joint and the end of the amputation that fire when I think about closing and opening my hand. So you still have a little bit of those muscles left. The early prosthetic devices that were electronic or myoelectronic, electronics reading muscle signal, would read that signal and your brain would think about close the hand, some of those muscles would fire, mm-hmm. and the device could respond and close the hand. So likewise, the muscles on the back of your arm, forearm, would fire when you thought about opening your hand. So below elbow amputees could actually open and close the hand with thought. And that's been around for a long time. But the thought of the nerve transfers happened if instead of below the elbow amputation, you went to above the elbow. So if you had an above the elbow amputation, you still have some muscles that fire when you think about elbow up or elbow down. But when you think about hand close and hand open, there was none of those muscles left. Interestingly, the nerve that carried that thought stopped in your upper arm. So the nerve transfers actually started to try and get hand open and hand close for upper limb amputees. We have two biceps. We left one of them connected with the nerve with the original thought of elbow up. We took the other bicep, disconnected that nerve, and put the nerve on it that would carry the thought for hand closed. So instead of two biceps firing when you think about moving your elbow, you would now get one biceps going when you thought about elbow up and the other when you thought about closing your hand. So all of a sudden now you had a way of getting hand closed thought to an electronic device.
I'm stunned and in great awe of this. Do you do this routinely or is this part of a special kind of study?
It is done selectively. It is done on, I would say, the majority now of upper arm and shoulder level amputees. And it is done for specific reasons on some leg amputees. People are working on reading your brain, reading nerves. But the best tissue we have to talk to electronics right now is muscle. So one of our patients from this area, Zach, he's been in the news. He actually had the nerve transfers. He actually went back to Chicago and used a prototype prosthesis and actually was highlighted on the news there for climbing part of the Sears Tower. I think it's renamed.
I'm speaking with University of Washington and Harborview Medical Center orthopedic surgeon Doug Smith. You have served as a consultant to the U.S. Military Amputee Center for more than a decade. And I can imagine that given the number of traumatic injuries in our troops who've been serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, that there is a lot more call for devices that allow them maybe not to climb a giant skyscraper, but to have a life where they can engage in activities.
Yeah, I was very fortunate that I got to help initially with the U.S. Army when they set up the first amputee center after the war started at the end of 01 or 02. And then the military now has three centers. I am extremely impressed with all the military physicians. I actually was blessed to be able to work with them and actually do some surgeries at those centers.
So when you look across the U.S., both civilian and military, about how many people have these electronic, or I think of them as like the bionic man, bionic legs at this point in time?
Electronic prosthetics are growing. Many arm amputees, I would say probably half to two-thirds, take advantage of the electronic technology. Many still prefer actually the non-electronic, and there are some reasons for that. In the leg prosthetics, the main part that was electronic or run by microprocessors was the knee unit. And that initially worked with just with body motion and traditional amputation. These nerve transfers are allowing us to put better signals into the electronic devices. But for the most part, for leg prosthetics, the knee unit is still the area that needs the most input from our brain.
So would you estimate there are 100 people that have these kinds of electronic legs, or 1,000 people?
The number of people that have had the nerve transfer surgery in their leg that are using prototype-type prosthetic devices is still very small, probably under 100.
How long does it take someone to adjust to this really high-tech kind of leg?
Well, again, going back to the arm amputees, which there are more of these people that have had the nerve transfers, interestingly, it's almost easier to learn if you're an above-the-elbow amputee and you are trying to really get an electronic device to control elbow motion and hand motion, it's actually easier to learn with nerve transfers than without, because your direct thoughts actually run all the motions. We don't know enough yet about the leg prosthetics, but likely the same thing will happen, that the more of our normal thoughts for motion that we can get to our electronic prosthetic devices, the more fluid and the more normally they should work. So the hope is that they will be easier to learn and actually have improved function.
What have been some of the biggest challenges that you've seen with people with these legs?
Well, the biggest challenge, again, with the type of legs we're talking about, is they're still prototype. They're not for sale.
So that's a big challenge.
And many people estimate when we do try to incorporate more electronics that the cost will be pretty high. The cost of prosthetics is very high. Part of that is because portion of leg prosthetics is custom made for each person. The socket, the part that goes on their leg, that takes a lot of hands-on molding, sculpturing. And the other part is developing these leg prosthetics or arm prosthetics with newer electronics that can communicate better with our thoughts. There's a very high research and development cost with that, and there are not as many amputees as people would imagine. It's not like cars where they sell millions of them. And so fortunately, there's not as many amputees, and so fortunately, they don't sell as many to recoup the investment.
That makes sense. How many of these surgeries have you yourself done or been involved with?
For the arm amputees, probably about 35 or 40. For the leg amputees, probably about 10.
10. How long do you envision it would be before this is something that is not only on the market, but the common type of prosthetic that somebody would get?
I think that the management of the nerve and nerve transfers is becoming more common. The prototype limbs, I think that will probably still be another 5 years before they're commonly available and have passed a lot of the safety tests that need to be passed before a device like this can be made available to everyone in the public. But I think within 5 years, there will be more advanced electronic devices available.
So I'm just thinking back to the beginning of the conversation when we talked about the Civil War and limbs made out of wood and leather and metal. You're envisioning within 5 years there that people who have experienced amputation for some reason will actually have much more range of motion than anybody certainly 150 years ago would have imagined, but even maybe 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's not just range of motion because even though some of those devices actually moved, it's how you control the motion. So even going back to Civil War times, they actually used harnesses and cables and pulleys so that you could use a motion, say, at your shoulders to actually operate a hook. But what we're doing is both improving that motion but refining how it's controlled.
And that it will also at some point function the same way our limbs function now if we have all four of them.
We're heading in that direction. It's still not like the old TV show, The $6 Million Man, but I think that's what people in our vintage think of. But we are heading in that direction because, again, it's not just having great electronic devices. It's actually having our brains be able to control them. How do you get the thought to the device? And so that portion of the process is moving forward as well.
Dr. Smith, thank you so much. Fascinating work.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's Dr. Doug Smith. He's an orthopedic surgeon at Harborview and the University of Washington Medicine. He spoke to my Record co-host, Marcy Silman. We've been talking about what happens when veterans come back home all this month. If you missed any of those stories, you can hear them at kuow.org. And if you have a story of your own of coming home, let us know. You can email us at record@kuow.org or call our feedback line. It's 206-221-3663.